Flight of the Conchords is now on Stitcher Premium. Hear all 6 episodes of the original BBC radio series that inspired their hit HBO show. This Laugh Out Loud series is available exclusively on Stitcher Premium in the U.S., a must-listen for all Flight of the Conchords fans. Start listening now with a 1-month free trial of Stitcher Premium. Go to stitcherpremium.com/BBC and use promo code WOLFDEN at checkout to get your free month. That's stitcherpremium.com/BBC and use promo code WOLFDEN. Welcome to The Wolf Den, the podcast about the business and people of podcasting.
Wait, who's this guy? Oh, it's Lex. I'm Chris Bannon.
I've missed you so much, Chris, and I'm Lex Friedman. I'm back.
I know you're back. It's great to have you back. Today, our guest is Kathy Doyle. She's the senior director of Macmillan Podcasts and the director of Quick and Dirty Tips. But Lex, I guess we have another feature we have to do now that you're back. I'm off my rhythm here.
You were doing it without me for a while, yeah. I guess. But of course, we have to get to everyone's favorite segment on the show, Shows We're Jealous
Of. It's
the
only other segment we have.
It's true.
Besides the
interview.
Don't
tell them that. But this is where we highlight the shows that we like that are not mid-roll shows. Chris, is there a show you're jealous of this week?
Not this week, Lex. This week, I have a show I'm proud of.
Oh, wow. Boom.
I was waiting for that reaction. It's Comedy Bang Bang. We're taping this the week of the 500th anniversary of the 500th show anniversary of Comedy Bang Bang.
Wow.
I was listening to that this morning as I was coming into work today, and it's a great show, and I am proud that it is on, and in fact, that it started, really, the Earwolf Network.
Yeah, that 500th episode is uproarious. I haven't heard the whole thing yet, but it's probably not the best episode to start with if you haven't heard the show yet.
I would rewind a little bit, go back into the archives.
I struggled with what show I was going to pick today because there were several that I was thinking about, but I'm going to go with Mogul, which hopefully you didn't mention while I was away.
No, I did not. I've heard it's good.
But Mogul's from Gimlet and Loudspeakers, both of whom we're very friendly with, and it's a fascinating show about hip-hop, and I don't know if you call it the origins of hip-hop or the evolution of hip-hop, but it's really good. It's really well-made, like every Gimlet show, and I have thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm only 2 episodes in, but I have thoroughly enjoyed it.
That's great. Well, Kathy, before we formally start this conversation, do you have a show you're jealous of?
I actually have 2. First of all, thank you for having me, and congratulations on Comedy Bang Bang.
Thank
That's
you
a huge
very
achievement.
Much. Yeah. And I had nothing to do with its success.
There you go. Two, I have. One is the 30 for 30 series. Mm. You know, watching what ESPN is doing in some ways is analogous to some of the work that we're doing, but in particular, just their premise of taking something that's related to their core, that being sports, of course, and using storytelling opportunities to engage and interest fans in a very different way, I think is very unique. The episode I listened to was Yankees Suck, very high-minded show, which tells the story of the punk rock kids in the 90s and that brutal rivalry between the Yankees and the Red Sox and how they just showed up at a game, listening to that chant, went home, and decided to make those t-shirts, those famous iconic t-shirts that everybody has seen, right?
That's funny.
And, you know, the story is very engaging. At one point, these now almost middle-aged men recall having like $20,000 in a shoebox in their apartments and all the different ways they had to escape the police, the people who, you know, made sure they weren't selling t-shirts. But they apparently made hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it's a very interesting story.
Officially, Lex cannot support rogue t-shirt operations.
That's right.
In his role as chief revenue officer and the master of pod swag.
And the other one is a show, I just heard the preview the other day. The first episode drops on July 31st, I think. Dylan Marin, who's Carlos on Welcome to Night Vale.
Oh, yeah.
He is doing a show, I think it's going to be fantastic, Conversations with People Who Hate Me. So he's a social justice writer. And obviously very strongly opinionated. And he gets a lot of, you know, grief for some of the things he says online.
Wow.
A lot of really almost violent response to some extent. And he just did this thing that I think is so great. He picked up the phone and started to call some of these people. And
wow.
To take these hateful conversations and try to turn them into something productive. So that, according to the preview, I'm sure he's not always successful, right? but I think it's going to be interesting. There's some clips in the preview. I encourage you to listen to it. But he won't always be successful.
I did a show by that title once
for a while,
but it was with my family. Sorry,
I think we could all have that conversation. But anyway, I give him a lot of credit. I think it's a very brave show. I think he won't always succeed, and a lot of people will still hate him, but I wish him well. I hope it turns out great.
That's great. 2 good recommendations
Thank
for
you.
The price of one.
There you go.
Kathy Doyle is the Senior Director of Macmillan Podcasts and Quick and Dirty Tips, and thank you for coming in today officially to be on The Wolf Den. Let's start with something very simple. The Quick and Dirty Tips Network, what is it? Where did it start?
So what I always say to people is QDT, as we call it lovingly, was a podcast network before being a podcast network was even a thing. It came to be. Its origins date back to 2006.
Mine too.
There you go. I know. What was it? The Unprofessionals? What was
you haven't
name?
Aged
That's right.
well.
That's right.
See, I know.
That was good.
Mignon Fogarty, who is Grammar Girl, started. She was editing technical writing at the time and kept finding her clients were making the same mistakes over and over again.
Grammatical mistakes.
Yes. And, of course, she was working out of Silicon Valley and wanted to walk the walk. And netcasts, podcasts, whatever they were at the time, just started to emerge. And she thought, why don't I record some of these tips so that I can distribute them more efficiently to my clients? And that's what she did. And it, you know, it was obviously a public feed at the time, and she started to get some traction. And I guess early 2007, an editor at Macmillan by the name of John Sterling picked up the phone and called her. And she answered the phone because people actually still did that back then, right? Mm-hmm. She, not knowing who was calling.
Did she say, I hate
still,
you?
There
was
still
was a part of the people who hate me
right.
conversation.
No, maybe she should have thought of that. But she picked up the phone and they very quickly, I think, had a conversation that both of them realized would go beyond a book, which of course was the primary reason for the call.
Right.
So within, I don't know, 6 to 8 months, Macmillan had entered into a joint venture with Mignon. And around that same time, too, she was being approached by other subject matter experts coming to her saying, some of them were friends, colleagues, some of them were people she didn't even know, saying, you know, how do I get in on this? So it became very clear that she could put together other experts in fields where useful, practical, quick tip information was relevant.
Do you know whose idea it was to make every show, because she was Grammar Girl. Do you know, was it her call or somebody at Macmillan's to say, let's make all of them as alliterative as we can? Because I think it's really a nice brand, but you got Clever Cookster and Get It Done Guy.
Yes. I mean, they're great names. They're very catchy. They were meant to be very memorable. Most of that, of course, except for the ones that I've added since 2012 when I joined Macmillan, were already present. So.
And is there a sort of overriding sound or feel or approach to the audience in these shows, no matter what topic they cover, they have to do three things in your mind when you decide to make one or not?
There definitely is. I think every QDT show sticks to the same brand mission and goals, which are to be quick and dirty, obviously, to be very actionable, useful information. And most of our hosts, all of our hosts really, do a phenomenal job of cutting to the chase. The show is very short in format. It's like 5 to 7 minutes in some cases. Some of them go 10 to 15. But I think every host does an admirable job of taking that short amount of time and really giving you something you can use in your everyday life.
How do you imagine, I mean, most podcasts, I mean, for a long time, they were quite long. Many of them still are long. The long form, rather, the daily is proven, I think, that a daily shorter podcast can work. Why did you believe, or why did Macmillan believe so confidently in the short form so early?
I think it was an experiment to begin with. You know, podcasting wasn't really a thing back in early 2007 when they were starting to emerge down this path. But I think Macmillan's always been an organization where the reader, or in this case, the listener, comes first. And I think at the most high levels within our organization, they truly believed in the quality of this content, and they believed in unique and different ways to disseminate it, whether it be a listener or a reader.
Now, you joined Macmillan and QDT in 2012, right?
That's right.
And previously, you'd been at Dow Jones and the Wall Street Journal. What motivated you to join, and what did you set out to do when you started there?
So it all started with a dog.
As all good stories do.
I'm sure my husband's going to hear this, and he's going to be thrilled that I'm telling this story. In 2000, I was just an early adopter of podcasts, was started listening to them because of that dog. Came home from work one day in March of 2008, and there was a puppy in the house. For those of you considering a dog, I strongly urge you to discuss it with your partner first.
Oh, yeah.
Oops. Oops, big oops. Anyway, I did come to fall in love with the dog and started walking the dog and, of course, was looking for something to entertain me during those long 5:30 a.m. walks and happened upon podcasts.
What'd you start with?
Yeah.
Actually, well, you know, some of the old standards, but the show that caught my ear almost immediately in 2008 was a new show from QDT. It was called Nutrition Diva. It's hosted by board-certified licensed nutritionist Monica Reinagle. And she's also an opera singer, hence the Nutrition Diva, non-alliterative name.
I know, the rare non-alliterative title.
And it's just, it is a fabulous show. And I just learned a lot about the medium through my early listening. For example, if on release day I counted on that content for my walk and it wasn't there.
Yeah, that's
a part of my collection.
Bad thing.
So everybody on our team now knows, you know, it's a really bad thing to miss a release date because that used to annoy me.
Yes.
And that was back in the early days, again, when people, you know, were just learning about the medium.
And you were at the Wall Street Journal then. What were they doing in podcasting?
I was actually not at the Wall Street Journal then. I left the New York Law Journal, American Lawyer Media, where I did a 2-year stint in between. And I was developing digital products.
Gotcha.
So when I came to Macmillan, Mary Beth Roche, the president and publisher of Macmillan Audio, had quite a challenge to try and find someone. Because one of the things people don't always realize about QDT is that it's a cross-platform opportunity, digital opportunity.
What do you mean?
So every transcript of every episode is also on our website, where we also supplement with bonus content. We have guests on a lot of our shows from, we're so fortunate to be able to draw upon the incredible resources of our global organization to bring in authors from Flatiron Books, from St. Martin's Press, from Henry Holt, and have them be guests. We can do audio excerpts from some of their books. And all of that content is not just on the podcast, but anything that's perhaps not appropriate for the podcast goes onto the website.
And what's the, do you feel like there are different audiences for the print versions of these shows than you draw to the podcast?
We do believe there are different audiences, although we know some people, like me as an early adopter, do cross-platform. Mm-hmm. We oftentimes find that those people who read our newsletters or who go to our website and comment, if we respond back saying, here's the complete archive of Savvy Psychologists episodes, they say, oh, I didn't realize you had a podcast.
Wow.
So we are working hard to try and bridge that gap and ensure that listeners and web users know that we're a cross-platform opportunity.
That actually kind of ties in with a question I was going to ask you, that podcasts in their purest form are not accessible, right? If you have a hearing impairment, you can't enjoy podcasts. And we have one show right now that I think we're actively transcribing, Beautiful Stories from Anonymous People. But most of our shows, we aren't. And I'm in favor of transcribing shows, but there's also the concern that if I can read the whole podcast, are you worried that people won't listen if they know that they can read the transcript of the podcast, or has that not proven to be the case?
That has not proven to be the case. And we actually have heard from members of the hearing impaired community who are very appreciative of the fact that they can access this content via the website and they're aware of it. So, no, not to
Is it expensive to do all that transcribing? How do you manage to make that affordable?
Well, they are affordable? Quick and dirty.
Well,
they just jam on the keyboard.
No,
and
but
call it
you still have spelling.
We actually do it in a very, I think, unique way. We have a senior editor, Alyssa Martino, and each host actually writes out their transcript first and then puts it into our content management system.
Wow, the host
She will edit
themselves.
It, give some feedback, really help strengthen the piece, although most of our hosts are exceptional writers. And then it goes back into the system and the queue begins, right? The host then gets approval to record his or her episode and it goes back into the can and gets scheduled for release by one of our producers.
And do your producers help coach them in the delivery of that material? If they're reading from a script, essentially, how do you know you're bringing someone may be a great writer, but how do you know that they're going to have a mic technique that's going to make it listenable?
Most of our hosts are real professionals and have been doing this for a while. At the onset, when we bring someone on board, we do provide training if it's a writer.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. It's a pretty well-oiled machine at this point.
And
the success of QDT and all those hosts there, tell us how then that led to the birthing or the creation of Macmillan Podcast Network.
Right. First of all, the QDT format, we are so true to our brand, and I think we've leveraged it so well, and we continue to do so. But to some extent, a short format show like that is very limiting.
Mm-hmm.
And not everything is a quick and dirty tip, right?
Right.
I mean,
plus, it can only support a couple of ads where I want your shows to be filled with
we
ads.
We want our shows to be filled with ads, too. And
the
let me just
the not
say,
so hidden agenda.
Lex, that I have to tell you, I do want to bring this up because I think it's important.
Uh-oh.
One of your sales reps paid us the ultimate compliment. He said to me, the QDT shows are a safe haven for advertisers.
That's nice.
And I loved that. It really resonated with me.
What did that person mean?
I think it's a very great collaboration we have with Midroll. And I think... Well, I know. What he means is that our hosts are reliable, and they really, as Monica Reinagle, Nutrition Diva, always says, give good sponsor. You know, they are very—we have a philosophy and an approach that is very dual-sided. We don't just believe that it's critically important to delight our listeners. We truly believe it's critically important to delight our advertisers and to really bring value to that experience.
I mean, there's another, I think you're exactly right in that interpretation, but it's with many shows that we sell. I remember my first week on the job, I was like, I had listened to WTF, but I had never sold it. I sold my first ads onto WTF with Marc Maron. And then I listen to that episode with new ears when I'm hearing my first Maron ad. And I'm like, oh my God, he starts the episode, every episode. Hey, welcome. What the fucking ears? What the fucking Alex? What the fucksters? I'm like, oh my God, what is the advertiser going to think about this? I do not have that fear when I listen to QVT episodes.
Well, it's funny you should mention that too, Lex, because you may recall a time when I called you very panic-stricken because our parenting expert was having a conversation with a certain underwear company.
Mm-hmm.
And some
I remember
of the things,
it all too well.
It's a very credible show. She is the mother of eight. She was not going to talk about certain parts of a person's anatomy on her show. So I called Lex, and thankfully he answered the phone. And we talked it through, and he's like, I know exactly who you're talking about. I'll call you right back. And we fixed it together in about 5 minutes.
Well, that's, you can talk through any underwear problem, really.
Listen, that's what they hired me for.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, in the long time that you and I have been working together since 2013, we've had a few of those really funny, great cocktail party stories to tell. Yes.
But you did feel, given that you're part of a huge publishing empire, mm-hmm. that there was more room to do things that were related to other parts of the Macmillan empire.
Absolutely. And we started to do it in ways that were integrated within QDT. I'll give you two examples. We had a history writer, Giles Milton. You might recognize him as the author of Nathaniel's Nutmeg. A lot of us read that in middle school. It's a story about the Spice Trail. He had been writing a series of paperbacks for Picador, our Picador imprint, which were loaded with really interesting little-known history facts. So we created a show called Unknown History. They weren't really mm-hmm. tips. They were just information in quick bites. So we made that work for the QDT format. And the show did really well. A couple of months ago on our Clever Cookster show, which you mentioned before, we did something I thought was very interesting and innovative. An author by the name of Peter Gethers, who wrote a great book, In My Mother's Kitchen, which was a lovely tribute to their cooking together, to her history as a mentor, to major chefs like Wolfgang Puck. Mm. We let him do a takeover of the Clever Cookster show. And I saw that as a win-win because he had a lot of great contacts. He was a great host. Kara Rhoda, who's the host of that show, did an introductory episode introducing him, his wonderful book, and talked about the fact that he'd be doing a takeover and sort of, you know, telling stories throughout those 4 weeks, both about his book. But he had Melissa Clark from the New York Times.
Oh, she's great.
Just really great. Brought on some great new energy to the show for just a few weeks. So that was sort of another way we, in an innovative fashion, pushed an author into the QDT format. But you're right, to your point earlier, it doesn't work for everything.
Yeah, and I wonder too, before we get to this week's big news from mm-hmm. you guys, mm-hmm. I wonder, and I've seen this across publishers, the publishing has been very invested in the creation of audiobooks, right? Very lucrative, a great way of talking about literature, people share them, et cetera. But I've also heard that there are elements in publishing who are very threatened by podcasting and don't really understand or feel that it can contribute to a bottom line or that it's in some way a threat to their business. And I wonder if you encountered that, without naming names, of course, within Macmillan or whether you've seen it elsewhere in the industry and how you respond.
Speaking on behalf of Macmillan, we definitely think there's opportunity for both. You mm-hmm. know, audiobooks are absolutely one of the best-selling formats in our industry, doing phenomenally well.
And you haven't seen that shrink since the advent of
no.
big podcasting?
No.
Okay.
Not at all. But I will say that we kind of think about podcasts for authors to some extent as audiobooks light. If you think about it that way, it's less of a commitment.
We're always less than, aren't we, Lex?
I'm sorry. I don't mean for the author. I mean really for the listener.
Yeah.
It's a great way to engage a listener in a new medium. And then hopefully they can increase that commitment by moving on to the audiobook.
Mm-hmm. So it's creative and it's marketing as well to some degree.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a great way to lead up to a book's release.
Well, so I want to get to the exciting big news coming out of Macmillan, but I feel like first we should take care of a little bit of housekeeping here and take a quick break.
I mean, whatever you say, you're the boss.
Earwolf has a brand new show for you, and it's not this one. It's available now, and I think you're really going to love it. Jessica McKenna and Zach Reno are two of the funniest people out there, and they're also two of the most musical. Together, they have made Off Book, the improvised musical podcast. People who know me know that I'm a huge fan of musical comedy in general. I heard the preview alone of this show and was already in love. The first episode has Paul F. Tompkins. That's what it says right here. Each episode, Jessica and Zach are joined by a hilarious improviser like Paul F. Tompkins or Mary Holland. And together, along with a live piano right there in the studio, they make a new musical on the spot. It is really, really funny. And they are extremely committed. Check it out right now. The show is pure, unadulterated musical joy in a podcast. Subscribe to Off Book from Earwolf in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Well, thank you, Lex. We're here with Kathy Doyle from Macmillan. She's talking about the expansion of the Macmillan podcast empire beyond quick and dirty tips. This week, in fact, when this podcast appears, you will have launched a big, exciting new thing. And I think I want you to tell us about it entirely because it's your, I know you've been thinking about it and working on it for months, if not years.
Yes, that's correct. We have launched a series of new podcasts throughout the beginning of this year. But on August 2nd, we're launching a new show that we're super excited about. It's called Steal the Stars. It was developed by Tor Labs, a new experimental imprint at Macmillan, in conjunction with us and in conjunction with Gideon Media.
What's experimental about it, just to sidetrack you for a second?
It's experimental in their approaches to genre publishing. And the first entry, if you will, is going to be starting with podcasts. Mm-hmm. So Steal the Stars, for example, will take the podcast and then post-series, turn it into a novelization, which will be available as an audiobook, an ebook, and a trade paperback.
And someday a major motion picture.
We hope, yes. Yeah. And we think the quality is good. Steal the Stars was written by Mac Rogers.
Mac Rogers, isn't he a famous podcast writer already?
Thank you, Lex. He is a very famous podcast writer. He is the author of The Message and Life After and lots of other great work. He works with his team at Gideon Media. And it has been just a phenomenal collaboration for a lot of reasons. First of all, we think the issue of sort of merging science fiction, drama, and publishing is very interesting and could lead to collaborating with Gideon and others in lots of interesting ways in the coming years. It's an artistic and industrial fusion, really, if you think about it.
Were you influenced by the success last year of the first season of Homecoming and The Mess? I mean, like, how did you wrangle the necessary resources? What persuasive ideas did you put forth at Macmillan that finally convinced them, yeah, we need to make one of these big, expensive shows, too?
I had a really long conversation with Lex before we embarked upon this.
Is that right?
Yes, back in December, and I came to see you.
That's right. I remember that.
We did our homework. We did our due diligence. But the credit really for Steal the Stars editorially—
Please be me.
It's not you.
goes to the team at Tor Labs, with whom we collaborate very closely. It was co-founded by Jen Gunnels and Marco Palmieri, whom you spent some time with them, Lex.
Yes.
They're very creative. They saw immediately the opportunity for the show. It is a sci-fi, noir, romance heist thriller. It's really great stuff. We're calling it the combination of Arrival meets Ocean's 11.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good, right?
Maybe Sammy Davis Jr. Yeah. will be in it.
But at the end of the day, not only is it entertaining and intriguing and extremely well written, but we think it's really a test bed for figuring out how to tell stories as new technologies present themselves.
Well, why do they call it, the founders call it Tor Labs? I mean, that's an unusual word to use as a publishing imprint.
It's very, there's a very good reason for that. They consider themselves mad scientists.
Uh-oh.
To some extent.
In every movie I've seen, that doesn't end well. Yeah. Okay.
Well, because it's experimental publishing. You know, they're going to be trying different things, different formats. We're monitoring new spaces, new technologies. We're talking about new distribution channels actively with lots of partners. And it's a very exciting time to
and
be taking storytelling.
Right?
It's fascinating.
To say a publishing company is first launching a fictional audio piece, right? And it's not an audiobook. There will be an audiobook companion, but this is decidedly not an audiobook. It's something else. And it's for that to come, I can't think of another example of something coming out of the Macmillan empire that is non-printed word publishing that's outside of the podcasting.
This is audio first.
Yeah.
For folks who are listening this week and will go back and sample Steal the Stars, does it have a sound environment? What's the aesthetic that you were shooting for when you set this team of people together and said, go make this thing? Because some people, when they make audio theater, you can't even call it radio theater anymore, will go for, you know, almost no sound effects and some light scorings. Other people will go more heavily to bring you into a very sort of cinematic place. Did you have a sort of idea in your head when you started talking to the creative team there?
I think it was the latter, to really make it more cinematic. These are a group of very talented people who come from the theater world, the New York theater world. The cast is exceptional, all New York-based professional actors. Jordana Williams is the director. She comes from an amazing theater background. So I think it was definitely the full experience.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, it's exciting. Compared to the budgeting for, how many episodes is it, I should ask?
It'll be 14 episodes.
That's a long season. Mm-hmm. How long did it take you to make the show? Like, in other words, how many weeks did they spend writing? How many weeks did they spend recording? And then how many weeks did they spend sound designing and so forth? I mean, because people who listen, who think about, well, maybe I want to write a thing like this or produce one.
What are they getting into?
What are they getting into? Exactly right. And I think that's I know we've done that, you know, with Uncle Birdie at HAL Premium. That show took 6 months each season for those folks to make in New Zealand.
The process has been ongoing for several months.
Right. Right.
And given that you are doing the novelization, I'm assuming it started with Mac writing the script.
That's correct.
First it was scripted, and then who's in charge of the novelization? Is there another writer on that, or is it Mac?
It's one of the folks from Gideon Media.
Got it. But this is not something that happened overnight. When did you first kick off the idea for Steal the Stars versus the launch date here in August?
I believe we started talking about it toward the end of last year.
So that's a big process.
So it's been a process.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of what kind of a cycle? You're going to become a sort of studio that does more than one of these every year, I assume, right? That's the goal. So will there be the sort of science fiction, romance, adventure genre house working Tor Labs on its thing? And then will you have maybe more straightforward comedy, or will you find ways to tell history, or the classics? I mean, you have all these books that you have rights to. How do you decide what to do next?
And we have all these great books yet to come. That's
right.
So exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we really are at just we're in a really great place. We're in a position where we have great support from within the Macmillan organization, and we're actively having conversations. We have several other shows in development, which we've been talking to Midroll about and some other partners.
What?
Wait a minute.
Distribution partners.
Oh, okay. Right. We can continue.
We're doing a true crime podcast, which will be hosted by Charlie Spicer, who's vice president and executive editor at St. Martin's Press and is really well known for
his
true
crime. I love St. Martin's Press. Near and dear to my heart.
Wait, why do you love St. Martin's Press? Pardon me.
I was published by St. Martin's Press.
Oh, God.
Do you want to talk about your book, Lex?
Nope, okay. I don't. You can feel free to Google it.
Thank you. Yes. Kathy, but you earn bonus points for offering him the very polite opportunity.
I am very familiar with his book.
I'm sure.
Yes.
Indeed.
I haven't actually
how
read
many cocktail
it, but I know
parties
what it's about.
Has he ruined by talking about it? That's the question.
There you go.
So true crime.
True crime.
It'll be called Crazy for You, and it's a miniseries based off People reporter Michael Fleeman's book about the murder of Rusty Snyderman, who was a suburban businessman and husband in Atlanta. And if you want to know more, you'll have to listen to the series.
Wow.
Good tease.
Yeah. And we've got a few more in development as well.
That's great. Is there a genre you, just as somebody who listens to a lot of shows and makes shows, you think, oh, that's just not going to work in podcasting? You have so many different, I mean, cookbooks, maybe that would be hard to do as a podcast, but maybe not, right? Melissa Clark could probably have a
podcast.
Well,
we love talking about cooking. We have a great cooking show that oftentimes, you know, that's where the cross-platform thing comes into play too. Because if Kara Rota talks about, she oftentimes, almost always, we'll push people to the website to gather those recipes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Is there anything you can look at and say, like, nah, that'll never work?
Nothing comes to mind, although we have had a lot of those conversations and are working on sort of refining our best practices in terms of how to approach a show.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you think about the audience for Steal the Stars,
mm.
who's going to listen in the sense of there are people who love audiobooks and the people who are not into audiobooks? And there are people who love podcasts and people who don't love podcasts. We call those people crazy people. But is it the same people who would listen to audiobooks who would listen to Steal the Stars? Or do you think it's a different audience? Do you think there are people who would say, hey, I could listen to both because I'll hear this dramatic version and then I'll hear the narrative overall story read to me as well?
I think time will tell. I think there's quite an opportunity for there to be some crossover. I also think that anybody who's listened to podcasts, I mean, we've developed what I think is a very strong marketing plan for Steal the Stars to try and reach those people that we believe either have already engaged with Tor, and there are millions of them out there because it's such a well-known and high-quality science fiction brand.
What's exciting, I think, is that so many people, Chris likes to talk about S-Town as maybe the first novel.
Yeah. Well, it's a work of art. It's right. like a full-on work of art.
Even though it's a nonfiction novel. And, you know, I think that if S-Town were the first podcast, I don't know the podcasting could have grown as fast. I think people almost had to warm up.
That's right.
And train themselves to be able to appreciate longer form audio and on demand and all those things. So the audience has demonstrated, I think, now that they have the patience and attention span and tenacity and dedication to listen to longer form things like this. And I feel like that all those descriptions make a ton of sense to me when you're thinking about people who listen to audiobooks as well. An audiobook can be a 12, 20 hour commitment. What's the average episode length for Steal the Stars?
It's about a half hour, a little under a half hour.
So this is around a 6 hour commitment, right? 7 hour
That's
commitment,
correct.
Somewhere in there.
Do you think there's a way in which a thing like Steal the Stars will influence the way audiobooks get made? Are podcasts changing audiobooks in some way? Because for a long time, audiobooks had the world to themselves, right? And then there was radio and then...
I don't think it's going to change it because I think there's room for both. And like I said before, I think the audiobook is a bigger commitment. But I think there's more opportunity for people to dabble in podcasting and perhaps, you know, start and stop in different ways in terms of the way they consume the content than if they were to engage with a full-blown audiobook.
I thought that Malcolm Gladwell's show, Revisionist History, was an interesting blending in some ways because so much of that material that he presented in that show has been obviously written ahead of time. They went out very quickly, I think, and found ways of introducing voices into the storytelling that made it seem very, very organic what the thing was. But it really was, on first hearing, I thought, oh, it's an enhanced audiobook. And that feels to me like a format with a lot of potential for publishers.
I think that's very true. And I think at the end of the day, it comes down to, as we've been talking about internally, taking each author, taking each content set, and really treating it individually and finding that magical mix, right? So that the show that you produce does incredible things for the listener and really engages them and keeps them entertained in whatever genre you're working in.
Can I ask you a question about your prehistory,
sure.
The Wall Street Journal time?
Yes.
You worked at giant publishers.
Yes,
Dow
media
Jones
companies.
Is giant. They were an early adopter of a paywall. And they actually did start making podcasts, I think, too, fairly early-ish. What was that environment like when you were there in terms of the future? Like, what were they looking at in terms of audio specifically, but just the digital world in general?
I can't really speak to audio, but I can tell you an interesting story about my very early days there working on the digital side. It's going to really date me, though.
but that's okay. We're both older and...
Yeah. So the original plan for WSJ.com, the Wall Street Journal Online, I was on that product marketing and development team. And it was originally conceived as a closed-end sort of AOL-like dial-up service. We're going back to the modem days.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yes. I always said when my mother finally understood what a modem was, I had come full circle.
Finally had a legitimate job.
Finally. Yeah. Nobody. I would try to talk about, you remember the sound of a modem? You know, it's very distinct.
Yes.
We all kind of remember that. And at some point during the process, I don't remember exactly when, but the publishers and the editors got together and said, you know, this internet thing, it's not really going away. And we stopped what we were doing and turned it into a website.
Wow.
So it was a real pivot.
Yeah.
At a very critical time.
And how long did that take to launch the whole thing?
The whole process probably took, I can't, it was a long time ago. I don't remember exactly how long it took. Because then once we launched, we did a beta. And then we did the full site. And then we put up the paywall. And as part of that time, I was an employee. For a lot of that time, I was a almost full-time consultant for them. But the times were very interesting. I mean, I can remember very specifically when we developed the registration form for the paywall you just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have a list of countries.
How awesome is that?
One of my responsibilities was to try to find a comprehensive list of countries to put on what wasn't even yet called a drop-down list.
Wow. Yeah. That's
so
old school.
It was really exciting. I actually remember being in the room with the web developer when he did the first push to production. So it was a heady time. It was a crazy time, but I wouldn't trade that experience for anything. It was amazing. So,
very cool.
Good.
Now, we have one question that we've been really curious to ask you, and we promised not to make your answer public except for the millions of listeners of the Wolf Den.
We only have two listeners. You know that.
Your personal preference. Books or audiobooks?
Oh, I can't answer that.
Oh, man.
I will answer that. I mean, yeah. I think I choose based on what I'm doing. You know, there's nothing like curling up at the end of a long day with a book in your hand, but there's also nothing like taking my now 10-year-old Black Lab for a walk and listening to great content, whether it's a podcast or an audiobook.
I'm really curious about what you listen to for pleasure. We all, if we're in this industry, we have things we have to listen to, right? Tell me what's on your, oh gosh, I'm really looking forward to the next episode of Blank List.
Oh, right now, Ear Hustle.
Oh, yeah. Good choice.
Yes, that's been really an interesting innovation, I think, in storytelling. Who would have ever thought that a host would have been allowed to go into San Quentin and to get so real with some of the inmates there and tell these just incredible stories, some of them very moving. And I think you're caught off guard by how emotionally involved you get with the inmates to some extent, because some of them have committed these horrific crimes. So I find that show fascinating.
I mean, when podcasting is done well, you really connect with other people, right? Empathy is the secret sauce of a lot of great shows.
Such a great point.
What else?
You know, I'm a foodie, so I love listening to some of the old school cooking shows. I listen to The Splendid Table, which I think is a really well done, very long
new host
show.
On The Splendid Table,
new
right?
host, yes.
What do you think?
Great.
Okay, good.
I've been trying to think recently about what the podcasting equivalent of the driveway moment is, right? I think it's public radio that likes to talk about.
That's right.
You're driving home and you're so engrossed in a story that you stay in the driveway with the car still on so you can finish listening to this.
Usually it's because my car breaks down right there.
In your car's case, that is true. But with podcasting, since it is pausable, I was trying to think of what the equivalent is. And what you were just mentioning, you know, how you listen a lot while walking the dog. We have extended walks so that we can finish listening to podcasts, my wife and I.
Yes.
And
Alyssa Martino and our editor was just saying she was doing that something very similar while listening to Steal the Stars, actually, which we can do because, you know, we're working on it.
Yeah.
But she was saying the same thing, that they wished that they had more listening time. But I want to mention a couple other shows that I think are really important. I'm also a podcast nerd, obviously, since I'm in the industry.
Here you are.
Yes. And so while I don't get to listen as much for pleasure as I would like, there are several shows about the industry, like this one, that I listen to religiously. Like, I'm not just saying that because I'm here.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes. But there are two others. I think The Libsyn Show with Rob Welch and Elsie Escobar, The Feed, it's called.
Yep.
And the other one is Todd Cochran and Rob Greenlee, both Hall of Famer. I guess Rob is soon to be a Hall of Famer. And Todd already is. Their show is called The New Media Show. And it's usually long. It's about an hour and a half. But I never walk away. You know, QDT's staff right now is three. There's three of us. Alyssa Martino and Kelly Dickinson, who's our product and marketing manager, and myself. So right now, while we're adding to staff, we have our hands literally in everything. And 12 weekly shows already, and then the new McMillan shows. And we are staffing up. But right now, that's our current staff. So my hands are in everything. Mm-hmm. I have to know things like the new Apple tags that are coming with iOS 11. I have to understand what the IAB measurement guidelines stand for and represent and how they're going to affect our business so that we're prepared to deal with them. So I just, you know, I'm constantly sending out to our team, listen, at 32.15, you have to understand what's going on with Apple. You know, how do we fit that into our content management system so that we're ready in the fall when that happens? So I find it very valuable that people like you take the time to educate people like me.
Oh, well, thank you. Do you have thoughts about what Apple's going to be doing this fall and how it might affect the work that you do or the things you choose to make?
I think there's a lot of opportunity there, you know, certainly for seasonal shows, right, and episodic shows.
Right.
But we haven't really fully amassed.
Well, we don't know exactly yet what's coming, right? We have a general sense, but we haven't seen it.
Right.
They've been great about, you know, sharing information as they develop it. I just haven't really digested it all yet.
I think my own take is that on the user interface side, what you're talking about on the serialized shows and things where you'll be able to break them into seasons and show them in the correct order, those are wins no matter what. I think we're all curious on the, you know, the economics of the business, what the new data Apple will start sharing is going to mean.
Absolutely.
I feel confident that Quick and Dirty Tip shows will be listened through at a 90% level, given their brevity, right? If you choose to actually go in, you're going to listen through most of it at the very least.
And I think that's a great point. And I also think the point that we were just talking about, where if the content is really high quality and engaging in ways that you want more time, as Lex said, to listen to it, you will at least get people to listen through almost to the end of the show.
That's right.
We don't achieve that, but we really strive for it.
I think it'll be great to know, right? Because in the end, someone like you, Chris, you'll use it.
horrific to find out for this show, actually.
I have one other micro question for
sure.
you. Like the every time I'm a frequent flyer, almost always on United Airlines, and the QDT shows are always
there.
Were
you paid to say that?
Yes. This episode is also brought to you by United Airlines. They
hate like
you.
To be called United. They like to be called United. I've learned this. Yes.
I believe you. But so how did QDT end up there?
It was a cold email from someone at United who was in their on-demand entertainment department. He was a fan of our shows, and we were, for a very long time, the exclusive podcast provider to United. It was exciting for several years. They've now expanded their content.
But still, I mean, Grammar Girl and some of the rest are very prominently featured every flight. The podcast button, you press it, and that's who you see.
Isn't
all
that
the QDT
great?
Shows.
Yes,
it is.
That was a deal I struck in 2013.
Wow.
Are those shows refreshed as frequently as the shows that you put out in your podcast feed normally,
or
they're set aside in a kind of library?
I learned about in-flight entertainment is that on some older aircraft, it's actually a manual process. Someone actually has to bring that content onto the plane and load it. I'm sure that's not the case, and I know that's not the case for some of the more modern aircraft, but...
But the Ford Tri-Motors that I fly, seemingly.
They're literally bringing on a USB stick and dumping the information.
You learn a lot
in
content distribution, don't you? You learn all kinds of things that are going on behind the scenes that you never would have thought were happening.
That's true.
We make it seem so easy, but we all work really hard.
You do, and it shows across every show that comes out of the entire company.
Thank you, Lex.
Well, thank you, Kathy, for joining us here on The Wolf Den.
It's been my pleasure.
Of course, we need to tell our listeners where they can follow you and find all the QDT and McMillan content online. Can you tell them that?
Google McMillan Podcasts. You'll definitely find, we have a page on the U.S. McMillan site with all of our current shows and even some of our shows in development. And of course, quickanddirtytips.com.
Well, thank you again, Kathy Doyle, and thanks to Harry and Andy in the booth, and thanks to Jared for mixing. Don't forget, since you love The Wolf Den so much, you should subscribe at earwolf.com, on Stitcher, at Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. Just subscribe to the show and rate us on iTunes, because that's the only way Chris is ever going to get a raise. Thanks again.
Jess McKenna.
And I'm Zach Reno.
And we're the hosts of a new podcast right here at Earwolf called Off Book,
the improvised musical podcast.
Podcast. It's a podcast, but it's also an improvised musical where we get a guest and we talk to them, and then Scott Passarella starts playing, and then we black out for a second. When we come to, we've created a brand new musical.
Yeah. People are saying it's better than the Beatles.
You can say that too. If you listen to our first episode with Paul F. Tompkins or our second episode with Mary Holland, we got some great guests lined up. So guys, rate, review, and you gotta subscribe on that Apple Podcast, baby.
Or wherever you listen to your podcast. We'd like it so much. Just so much.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Want to hear Earwolf pilots before anybody else? We made a podcast feed just for you. Earwolf Presents is full of great stuff, like preview episodes for upcoming shows, peeks behind the paywall, and pilots for podcasts that haven't even been made yet. It's like getting to listen in behind the scenes here at Earwolf. Starting January 21st, Earwolf Presents will have a bunch of new pilots for you, like Edgar Montplaisir's The Wokest. Catch conversations between the wokest man in the world and comedians like Reza Lechea. Also, hear upcoming pilots The Florida Cast, Wow, You're Native American Too?, This Week in Sports, and Carl Alarm all throughout the month. Let us know what you think of them with hashtag Earwolf Presents. Subscribe to Earwolf Presents to hear more great episodes from around the network and behind the paywall, like an episode of Drew Tarver's Strictly Business with Derek Contrera, or Act One of Matt Besser's punk musical, Stolen Idea. Just search for Earwolf Presents in your podcast app and subscribe so you don't miss an update.